I'd like to get that problem solved. I don't think it's necessary for entrepreneurs to have to suffer in order to succeed. I think we can have economic gain without emotional pain.
Today's guest might be one of the most important people in the world of entrepreneurship. He is the foremost expert on how mental health affects entrepreneurship and is now focused on helping us cope with those challenges, which will literally save lives. What's up, guys? I'm John Roa, and welcome to Between Us, where we get the stories of vulnerability behind success. My guest today has spent the last 20 years analyzing the psychology of entrepreneurs. In many ways, this is the penultimate episode of Between Us, as identifying the struggles and peculiarities of the typical entrepreneur is exactly what this show sets out to do. On today's episode, Dr. Freeman and I discuss what draws certain people to the life of an entrepreneur and some of the key identifying factors in diagnosing and potentially treating many of the dangers that can overcome these types of people. We get into the modern phenomenon of entrepreneurs becoming celebrities and the potential problems that can arise from it. We also discuss the difficult topic of mental health and suicide in the business field, as well as his company Ekona. We also get into the system that entrepreneurs are forced to operate within, increasing investor consciousness, and much, much more. So much more that this is only part one of our two-part conversation. Without further ado, here's Dr. Michael Freeman. The most interesting thing to me, Doc, is that we've been talking for a few weeks, and I feel very fortunate to have met you, to be talking to you. It makes me feel honored, quite frankly, because your research, your paper, your point of view on this topic of being maybe the foremost expert of mental health when it comes to entrepreneurs and people like me is a topic that I care a lot about, is detailed tremendously in the book. That's the entire point of the book, is to focus on what you are an expert on. And you told me you've had almost 6,000 clinical hours of talking to entrepreneurs in a psychiatric setting like me. That is incredible. Over how much time have you been focused on speaking with people like me and helping them through their journeys?
John, I've been working exclusively with entrepreneurs for the last 20 years. I hate to acknowledge that because it's amazing how time flies, but I was a CEO myself. I mentioned to you previously that I have founded or co-founded a couple of companies. And in the one that we wound down 20 years ago, I had a number of corporate clients, among whom the founders of the smaller, more entrepreneurial startup type of companies impressed me as frequently having mental health issues.
Right.
And that's where I recognized there's some kind of relationship between entrepreneurship and mental health.
And what were some of those first signals? Like, what were some of the first things that you noticed and you went, interesting, there might be a bigger story here?
Not needing very much sleep, taking risks that are not necessarily prudent or well-informed, getting irritable and agitated, alienating one guy who had a business model that should have worked and a company that was in the right place at the right time, got so agitated that he alienated his customers, suppliers, senior leadership team, and blew up his own company. Marriages that fall apart, deep depressive episodes, drug and alcohol binges. It was pretty apparent. I had the advantage as a CEO of having been trained, finished my psychiatric training by that time. So I kind of knew what to look for, and I began seeing it. I wasn't out there looking for it, but it just made itself clear.
Yeah. And this is what I find so interesting, because it's not like you studied entrepreneurial mental health. You studied general psychiatric medicine. You're part of the Department of Psychiatry at UCSF, if I have that correct.
That's correct.
And there's a point, it sounds like, in your journey where being in Silicon Valley, in San Francisco, being around, frankly, people like me, you just started to say, huh, I know the signals, the signs, and I'm starting to see it play out. And there's probably a trend here. And over the next 20 years, have really developed an incredible amount of knowledge and data on this exact trend. And so what are some of the main things that you learned earlier in that journey that you said, I want to focus on this? I want this to be maybe arguably my life's work.
That's exactly right. And when at the beginning, if you have a scientific orientation, you start out with a hypothesis, and then you try to get data to validate or refute the theory. And so the theory was, based on my observation, that there is some mental health difference, or there's a set of mental health differences that distinguish entrepreneurs from other people. That was the theory. And I was very fortunate in that I am affiliated with University of California. And between UC San Francisco and UC Berkeley, we have a lot of really bright, talented people and good researchers. So I was able to collaborate with some exceptional people to begin to ask that question, study that question. We ran a couple of studies. We got some grants. We got a very helpful grant from the Kauffman Foundation, which is probably the most important foundation supporting work related to entrepreneurship. And then we conducted big studies, and we were able to answer that question. So the brief answer to your question is, yep, it turns out the hypothesis is true, that there are differences, that you are just not cut from the same cloth as your next door neighbor.
You use this word a lot, differences, because we would say mental health illness, you know, mental illness, mental health conditions. You use mental health differences. So what exactly do you mean by differences?
What I mean by differences, and I'm so glad you pick up on that, because it's a subtle semantic expression, but I use the word difference because I think we need to destigmatize mental health. And in fact, one of the things that I really admire about what you're doing, and a question I would have for you, is what I admire about what you're doing is you are talking about your experience and you are putting it out there, and you're putting it out there in a way that says to the reader of your very well-written book,
thank you,
and I was very impressed by how you told your story. You're saying, here's the package, here's the outcomes, let's figure out how all these pieces fit together. When I use the word difference, I don't want to say that you, John, have a mental illness. It's hard for me to put the concept of illness in the concept of creating 300 jobs, producing enormous value for the marketplace, having a good exit. That doesn't seem to fit in the same paragraph. So when I say difference, what I mean is you are different. You have a personality that's quirky.
Yep.
You are vulnerable to going over the deep end, and you wrote about that. And your moods can be reactive, and your thought patterns can be scattered, and you can end up having issues in relationships. And all of that can be problematic for you and problematic for your family and problematic for the employees in your companies. But I think we need a different way to frame all of this. And so what I try to focus people on is that entrepreneurs are just a different kettle of fish, and they have endowments and they have vulnerabilities. And if you put the endowments and the vulnerabilities together, that's what I call mental health differences.
Got it. And that makes a lot of sense, because I think people, that's one of the stigmas of all this, is mental health, mental illness, right? Because it does sound like a deficit. It sounds like a problem. And some of us very well might have diagnosable conditions that are, by all accounts, medically illnesses. But I think that contributes to the stigma of why we don't want to admit it, get support, help, because then you're saying you're ill. If you're ill, you're sick. If you're sick, you're not at your best, doing your best, et cetera. It seems like that's a very important nuance that you're working on there to try to maybe remove some of that stigma that we have around mental health.
That is a big piece of the puzzle. And I'm not the first person to make this point either. There's a famous psychiatrist who in the 1960s and 70s began writing about it. His name is Dr. Thomas Szasz, S-Z-A-Z. And he wrote a famous paper that says, a diagnosis is not a disease. Mm. The people in my practice, as you pointed out, I have a lot of psychiatric patients who are entrepreneurs. I prescribe medication for most of them. They use it from time to time, or they use it on an ongoing basis. And I would say many of them have a diagnosis. That's why they came to me.
Right.
ADHD is quite common. Bipolar spectrum issues are quite common. Anxiety is quite common. But I think we diminish the understanding of the person when you try to stuff it into this medical model type of nomenclature. And what I would like to do is to broaden the understanding so that people can see that an entrepreneur with anxiety and panic attacks, you wrote about panic attacks in your book, that the fact that there is such a thing as panic disorder does not mean we marginalize the entrepreneur who has panic attacks.
Right.
Just the opposite. I think we try to work with those entrepreneurs because those are the people who create jobs. And so I subscribe to the theory of this other psychiatrist, the diagnosis is not a disease. It's a way of describing a constellation of mental health symptoms that's useful to help. It would be useful for me to help you find strategies to stay well through that filter. But that does not capture who you are as a person. That's just a piece of it.
And let me ask this. This is a question that I've been asked, and I also think I know the answer to. But from your perspective, are these mental health issues the cause or effect of entrepreneurship? Are we born with these prerequisites in a way where our brains are a bit more attuned for risk, for stress, for excess, which we've talked about, for these things? We might have some of those either bipolar, ADHD, or anxiety written pieces, and that drives us towards the discipline of entrepreneurship? Or is it when we decide to walk down the entrepreneurship path, we start to experience these things that we're describing?
That is a very controversial question. It is a question that has been around forever. Mm-hmm. Are entrepreneurs made or born? And all I can say is whoever invented the wheel did not have an MBA. My answer to that is that by and large, the genetic component plays a very important role. That doesn't mean that getting education, getting training, having a mentor, taking a class, learning a skill doesn't make you better. But from the research perspective, what we identify is something called the propensity for entrepreneurship. If you take a classroom full of kids, this research was done in the 1970s, I believe. A guy named Salvatore Mannuzza did a study where he took a classroom full of kids and he looked at what happened to the children with ADHD and the children who didn't have ADHD. And he followed them for a decade or so, or two. And he found out that the kids with ADHD had twice the likelihood of becoming entrepreneurs as the kids without.
Interesting. So it might be some of these conditions or these differences drive us towards the things that make entrepreneurship attractive, might be more attractive to people that have these proclivities.
I could not say it better than that. The people that have the propensity for entrepreneurship are attracted into the field because it's of goodness of fit. Just like people that tend to have obsessive compulsive traits might be attracted into the field of accounting because goodness of fit between your personality and what the profession has to offer.
Mental health is a big topic and frankly a big issue, especially in America. Our numbers, and this is COVID aside, it's obviously getting worse throughout 2020, but COVID aside, this is a very dire state of affairs for people in this country and their mental health and in the world, but especially in America. And it seems like when you take these disciplines that are I'm going to call them the rock star disciplines. So quite literally, rock stars, musicians, actors, athletes, people who can individually become, you know, obscenely famous, wealthy, like all of that. There seems to be an incredible amount of mental health issues associated with kind of that 0.01 tier of success in these curtain things that is disproportionate to other people who are incredibly successful, right? Somebody who's a very successful lawyer and does very well for themselves, it doesn't seem like they're quite, and I hate to use the word, I know it's not the right word in your field, they're not quite as crazy. They're not quite as crazy as us entrepreneurs or other kind of 0.01 percenters of this kind of public success. Why is that? Why are all of us like that, you know, compared to other people who don't experience those kind of things?
Yes, that's a really good question. And it's a very good observation as well. A simple answer would be, let's talk about you and let's talk about entrepreneurs in general. Yeah. And then we can talk about other stars that you're getting into the celebrity world. What is it about those people who become celebrities? There are two things. One is they're charismatic.
Yeah.
I would argue that you're a pretty charismatic guy. That's my experience talking with you. When I listened to your podcast, that was my experience. But more specifically, when I read your book, you had a way of pulling yourself out of a kind of hangover, getting on stage and knocking out an audience. So you're a very effective communicator. Something about listening to you gets audiences engaged and emotionally excited.
Yeah.
So one thing is the charisma. The other thing is all of those people that you mentioned, all the celebrities and the stars, the one thing that they all have a lot of is followers. How do you have, what does it take to have a lot of followers? You have to be extroverted. You have to be outgoing. You have to somehow get energized by people. You wouldn't be hosting a podcast and talking to all these different people if you weren't actually interested in the people that you're talking with.
I'm a big time introvert, but I can turn on that extroversion lens or put on the extroverted hat to do stuff like this. But then I need a nap afterwards. So
it's very interesting. And you see that in sales as well.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, the people who are both extroverts and introverts.
Right.
But you're not in both modes at the same time. When you're in extrovert mode, you're on.
Yes.
So to answer your question, charisma and extroversion reflect an underlying mental health difference or two. The predisposition to be extroverted, extroversion is a trait. It's called a psychological trait. Hmm. And that trait is at least 50% genetically transmitted.
Okay.
Can people be extroverts who don't have the gene loading for it? Yeah, you can. Can one go to a class and learn how to develop networking skills and make friends and influence people? Yeah, you can definitely pick that up. The other 50% is not genetically transmitted. But my guess is when you come to the game with the hardwired extroversion and some of the other traits like openness to experience, curiosity, sensation seeking, a propensity for taking risks, and you land in a place where there's what you're doing resonates with other people, it elevates you into that more celebrity status.
That makes a lot of sense. Let me ask this question, because I think a lot about these other kind of public figure 0.1 percenters, and a lot of which we're starting to realize are that there are a lot less mental stability than other classes. And you're hearing a lot in like pop singers and pop culture. You're hearing about the Kanye West basically going on a diatribe about his mental health conditions, bipolar, which was intense. And then you're seeing it play out on social media. You've seen like Lady Gaga, who's basically built a brand over her mental health and that vulnerability and the honesty. And then you click over to entrepreneurs who are becoming public figures more than they ever used to be. The Elon Musks and the Bill Gates and the Steve Jobs are the celebrities of our generation and have cult followings as if they were stroking the guitar at Madison Square Garden. So might that be a connection to this new wave of entrepreneurship where it's not just inventing something in a back room and selling it, but we become more public figures and that drives us down those same kind of paths?
Yes. And I wish that Steve Jobs and Elon Musk and somebody in that world would follow the lead of Lady Gaga and talk about it.
Yeah.
I give Richard Branson credit because he will openly talk about what it's like to have ADHD without shame and stigma. And he has a pretty neutral attitude.
Now, let me ask you this. When did Richard, sorry to interrupt, but when did Richard start that conversation? Was that when he was still on the upswing trying to create his brand and his wealth? Or was that when he crossed the peak and was then able to say, you can't take it away now, so I'll speak about it?
Really good question, and I don't know the answer to that. But I do appreciate that he's talking about it, and I do appreciate that you're talking about it. Yeah. And frankly, and I'd love to get into this with you if you want to do something together, I think if we could create a forum where people on your list would be open to talking about depression, open to talking about manic episodes, open to talking about addiction, I think we could go a long way to making it feel emotionally safe for other entrepreneurs, including young entrepreneurs that are just getting started, to prevent themselves from derailing and to normalize this experience of being different, and to recognize that you can wipe out and that you can create a safety net so that doesn't have to happen.
And Dr. Freeman, that's what I've enjoyed so much about our dialogue in the last few weeks is that you're focused on a solution, right? I can present two things. I can present a story and the acknowledgement of the problem because I experienced the problem firsthand. Very difficult for me to then build that bridge to a solution because that is a macro societal medical. Yeah, it's a huge branching issue, but it's one that you've taken on directly with Ekona. So I want to hear about, so you started with observing this and then contributing from a psychiatric perspective to now trying to solve the problem.
Yes.
So talk about that journey and then Ekona.
Thank you for asking. The thing about being a physician is that, number one, you want to do no harm. And number two, you care about people. So what happened to me was after going through this stage of doing research and learning about it, and then having a couple publications and press began to reach out to me and ask questions. Two things happened to me. The first thing was I began to get calls from the families of entrepreneurs who committed suicide. This morning, I woke up, I got a text message from a family member who I have talked with in the past, where the young man, the son in this family, was an up-and-coming Silicon Valley entrepreneur and committed suicide. And I've been involved in helping this family make sense of it. This morning, the first text I saw this morning was that yesterday would have been his birthday. And thank you for creating Ekona because you're working on resources that have the potential to save lives in the future.
Wow.
That was very rewarding and motivating message to start my day off with.
Yeah.
The second thing that happened was we got data. It's been published. And the truth of the matter is we now know 3% of entrepreneurs in our largest and I think best study report a history of suicidal ideation. 1.4% of them report a history of psychiatric hospitalization. The number could be bigger because people often don't report things that they feel a sense of shame about.
Yeah.
But then 38% report anxiety, depression, ADHD, bipolar, addiction. And of the people who don't report having any mental health issues, half of them come from families where there's a lot of mental health issues. And they are the ambassadors of these positive traits like the extroversion without the dark underbelly. So I decided, if you know that this is out there and then you don't act on it, how is it not doing harm if you know that there's a problem and you know that it can be solved and you're not solving it? So I would like to get this problem solved.
Yeah.
I believe entrepreneurs are special. I believe that entrepreneurs are essential to our economy. I think the data is very clear that in the worst of times, in a recession, 2/3 of net new jobs created come from companies that are less than 5 years old. In good times, when the economy is humming, more than 2/3, closer to 80%+ of net new jobs, employment is good. But more than that, I believe that entrepreneurs are misunderstood. They're often suffering. They can feel quite lonely and isolated. They're under a lot of pressure to project an image of, I'm crushing it, I'm killing it, everything's awesome. And they, meanwhile, internally are experiencing very intense, intrusive emotions that are cause a lot of distress that they blot out with drugs and alcohol. I'd like to get that problem solved. I don't think it's necessary for entrepreneurs to have to suffer in order to succeed. I think we can have economic gain without emotional pain. And I think we can create a safety net. So Ekona, anybody who wants to be part of the solution, ECONA.net, is a bunch of people like me who want this thing solved, who are trying to put our heads together and create resources to build a solution. I can explain how it works, but that's what we're doing.
Yeah. We're going to talk more about Ekona. And I think continuing to frame the issue for those who might not be experiencing it directly or have not been entrepreneurs, I think is really important because this podcast is a wide audience. Not everyone's going to be the person who seeks the support, but I think it's understanding the issue in a broader sense is what I'm so passionate about. And we've talked a lot about is starting to share the accounts of this, the why it's happening is really important. And also what some of the even theoretical solutions are, because I just had a conversation with a guy who was on Shark Tank and he successfully pitched a product and got investment on Shark Tank. And he said going into that, there's a lot of anxiety. After that was a lot of anxiety. But obviously you're in that mode. You're out there pitching your product, and all the anxiety has to go away for that hour or whatever it is that you're actually pitching up there, right? You have to act the part and do the thing. And that's going to always be the way business and entrepreneurship is. What we're trying to share, and this is what I'm getting to, what we're trying to communicate is that there's got to be better ways at an overall basis to improve our balance, our mental health, our stability, our mood, our swings, all those things for just a day-to-day aspect. Because if we solve all these problems, but we're still forced to be full of shit all the time when we go on stage, when we're in front of an audience, where does that kind of blend come from? Because what we're not purporting is that he should have gone on stage and said, hey, Mark Cuban, here's all my issues and here how many bad decisions I've made. He'd be asked to leave instead of getting an investment. So what is the marriage between getting us to be more honest and real and vulnerable and open about what we're dealing with, but also still doing our jobs as the perpetual salespeople, as entrepreneurs?
That is a great question. And let me answer that on two levels.
Yeah.
The first level is we need a program of consciousness raising for investors. If you talk to the best investors out there, they will tell you that they know that a lot of the entrepreneurs they invest in are not the world's most stable people.
Right.
This is not a surprise to them. What they don't know is how to connect the dots from that realization to the companies that they select for their portfolios. And I believe that there's a way out of that. And I would like to actually publicly acknowledge two investors who are pioneers in shifting the way people think about it. One is Brad Feld. He's a partner at the Foundry Group. And another is Josh Felser. He's a venture capital guy out here where I live. He's a neighbor of mine, actually, Freestyle Capital. And these people are both openly entertaining dialogues on their blogs and in public forums about well-being and mental health for entrepreneurs. So I think we can shift the thinking of investors. And I think you and I and people who care about this need to be managing upward a little bit in the food chain and getting that message across. It's in their best interest to understand that too.
It's a really tough one. And what I've been thinking a lot about recently, because when I had to be on in this kind of like hyper bordering on probably like egotistical, but just like so boastful of how good we're doing and how much we're always crushing it and those kind of things, because it works, right? Somebody hears that and they're like, I want to put a stake in that guy, right? I want to bet on that horse. And that's why we do it. It works so well. But at the same time, we're lying to pretty much everyone in the room, including ourselves at some level. And this goes from what I did, which is just part of the game. I didn't break any rules. I wasn't breaking laws. I was just putting on a show. But it also wasn't good for my own mental health to do that all the time. But then you have the next level where there was an article today in Bloomberg that Elizabeth Holmes from Theranos, her attorneys are considering mental disease as her defense in her case for Theranos. So you're starting to see this spectrum of what I was doing, which is a fake it till you make it, put on a show, which wasn't good for my own mental health, but was still inside the bounds of the game, to now a multi-billion dollar federal criminal fraud case with Elizabeth Holmes. And she's considering mental disease being her defense for that. That's why she put on that show and created that fraud, et cetera. So it seems like a very delicate position that we're ending up in. And this is where I'm trying to figure out what the solution is, because had I not put on that show, I probably would not have succeeded. I wouldn't have got that first customer. I wouldn't have done any of those things. So it was bad for me, good for the company, and good for the future. With Elizabeth, she did the show, and now she's saying it might have been her own mental disease that caused multi-billion dollars in fraud. So how do you respond to that kind of aspect of the situation?
This is a nuanced conversation. You're raising a very good point, and it really requires and it really should receive some serious thought. The reality is, and you wrote about this in your book, that there are sociopathic people out there who scam. The world is full of scammers who exploit, who are callous, who for whom customers are just targets and victims, and that we somehow we as a society need to protect ourselves. It could be the scammer who your aging parents are, the older they get, the more people are going to be trying to figure out a way to target them.
Sure. Yeah.
For some kind of financial scam. Those guys are entrepreneurs too. So we should be honest that there are subtypes of entrepreneurs that don't all live in the same bucket. And there's research that demonstrates this as well. One study that impressed me a lot was a study of entrepreneurs who play a game with each other. And in the game, trust is involved. And there, what the research found is that one group of entrepreneurs who won based on having established trust with the other players would share some of the winnings with the people who trusted them. And some of the other entrepreneurs kept it all to themselves. Those are different subtypes of right. entrepreneurs. And we have to be honest that I don't know about Elizabeth Holmes, but corruption and fraud and the willingness to exploit, the willingness to harm is out there in the business world. You write about it in your book.
Yep.
In fact, bad things happen to you, your journey as well. You talked about that. So we got to be on guard. Having said that, having a mental health condition is not an excuse for bad behavior. Having a mental health, if you have a mental health condition, then it's your responsibility to manage that. If you have high blood pressure or diabetes, if you have epilepsy, you can't blame the epilepsy because you drive across the lane and kill somebody going the other direction. It's your responsibility to manage your own health.
Yes.
And what I think Ikona and our team would like to do is to give you, the entrepreneur, the self-care skills and resources you need so to not harm other people. But it's true that it's out there. The other part of your question is also true, that the attention that you get, the role that you play, has a shaping influence on you.
Yeah.
And it can make you more of a jerk. It's the celebrity, it's what happened to Michael Jackson. The celebrities end up in a bubble. They're surrounded by their entourage. They begin to lose touch with reality and they lose their humanity. They get disconnected from ordinary people. There's no consequences for their behaviors. And that can also make you worse.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of this is, it was always there. And a lot of this will stoke that fire as the entrepreneurs, especially in success. Somebody fails and they just usually, when it's not Elizabeth Holmes, they usually just dwindle away. We don't hear about them. It's when they succeed that you see some of that, you know, some of the excessiveness and some of the destruction, those things come about. And we're used to seeing it with pop stars and Justin Bieber driving a Lamborghini 200 miles an hour. And, you know, and like that's when we usually see it. But it's now becoming more and more common to see amongst entrepreneurs, recklessness and self-destruction, all these things.
They wipe out.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hard. It's pretty.
They wipe out hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want you to be on guard for that. There's something called sudden wealth syndrome.
Yeah. I remember.
And this is, you're right. You've gone through it.
Yeah.
You lose your humanity, you lose your perspective, and there's when you have a lot of money, then your bad choices have less consequences, and it's very easy for you to harm yourself and other people when you get into that bubble.
A little bit switching topics, because this goes back to the entire philosophy we're talking about, and I think we've used this exact point back and forth, but it's good to reshare it on the podcast for the listeners, is Kanye West. So when he went on the David Letterman Netflix show, this is like a year ago or 9 months ago or something to that effect, Letterman has his long form interviews now. So they talked for an entire hour and Letterman just hits him with the question about his mental health. And Kanye spent a solid 20 minutes speaking very openly about his mental health issues, namely bipolar. And if I can dig up the link really quick, it was pretty intense of how he described it. Here, I got it here. Give me 1 second. So Kanye tells David, he goes, "When you're in this state, you're hyper paranoid about everything. Everyone is now an actor. Everything is a conspiracy. You feel the government is putting chips in your head. You feel you're being recorded. You feel everyone wants to kill you. You don't trust anyone." And then he goes on to say that his particular affliction is a quote unquote luxury version. And that's because that's why he refuses to take medication. So for all accounts, Kanye West is a self-made entrepreneurial billionaire. And is the, for all intents and purposes, the CEO of his empire, of Kanye West Incorporated, let's say. And just because that he's an artist, because he creates music, he was given not only a pass, he was lauded. Everyone was saying how brave he is and how amazing that was and how much that did for people who were struggling with their own mental health. And I agree. That is amazing for someone of that nature to go on a program like David Letterman and say all of that. But if you were to put any, let's say, traditional entrepreneurial CEO in that seat, Elon Musk, or pick anybody, I don't care who it is, Zuckerberg or Sheryl Sandberg, put anybody else in that seat and they said those same words, the stock would have dropped by 90%. They'd have been fired within 24 hours. Why is that the case? What is up with these kind of protected classes, be it artists or musicians or athletes or whatever, that is so different than people who are traditional business people?
You've got a knack for asking really good questions. We want to believe in celebrities. Celebrities are today's versions of the Greek gods. What was the enduring superpower of the Greek gods is that they all had their flaws, every one of them. And that's what made them so relatable. The relationship between celebrities and fans, that's a big conversation. Let's just say that celebrities, to a certain extent, are created by fans in the same way that entrepreneurs are created by investors and customers. But your point is very well taken, that in the arts, in the creative and performing arts, the idea of the boundary between madness and genius is a little bit more accepted. Everybody knows about Vincent Van Gogh.
Exactly.
Whereas in business, the stigma, I believe, is more impactful because investors are afraid that it could affect shareholder value. And so there's more of an effort to suppress the conversation about mental health at that level.
Because we read your paper, we read the news articles, we read my book. We have to all at some point just agree it exists. So aren't investors who say, well, it's going to negatively affect value, therefore we can't talk about it, aren't they willingly and knowingly suppressing an issue?
Yes, they are. And it's one of the unfortunate characteristics of the marketplace, and hopefully culture can change, and hopefully we can, with destigmatization, address that. I think if we could just accept the likelihood that any highly successful entrepreneur will have mental health issues along the way and use that knowledge to empower entrepreneurs to have the behavioral and lifestyle skills and self-care strategies that they need to minimize the downside, then companies will be in a much better position to benefit from the upside.
Right.
Because bipolar disorder, since you're talking about Kanye West, is the classic example of the downside of being up and the upside of being down. That it's the classic example of the endowment that's coupled with the vulnerability. Kanye West very well could get to a point where he's a danger to himself and other people. He may have already crossed the threshold. I don't know. But if there's pressure to pretend, let's just take you and your friends.
Yeah.
If you feel a lot of pressure to pretend that things are good when they really aren't, you'll be reluctant to ask for help. But in your book, when I read your narrative, you basically had to have the shit beaten out of you before the light bulb went on and you said, what I'm doing now is not working. And I don't have the skills and resources myself to get myself out of this. And you finally asked for help. And that was a breakthrough moment. It was a moment when a lot of things came together for you. This is not survivable.
Right.
If you had permission a lot earlier to ask for help, if there was nothing to be embarrassed about, your journey, you could have avoided some of those near-death experiences.
That's right.
That you wrote about.
Stay tuned next week for part two of my conversation with Dr. Michael Freeman. This topic is incredibly important to me as an entrepreneur. As we've discussed at length on this show, and as I talk about in my book, I've experienced firsthand the trauma that can occur when your mental health suffers as an entrepreneur. And bringing more insight and exposure to this is an important first step in finding solutions. Next week, we'll delve further into the dark side of the psychology of being an entrepreneur. For more information on Ekona and Dr. Freeman, please visit www.ekona.net. That's ECONA.net. My memoir, A Practical Way to Get Rich and Die Trying, is now for sale at all online retailers and in person at Barnes & Noble. You can follow me on social media at John Roa. That's JohnRoa. And the podcast at Between Us _pod. A big thanks to Jam Street Media and my producers, Casey Franco and Maddie Stout. This is our last episode of the year, and I believe I can speak for many when I say we will not miss 2020. But after such adversity, there will be opportunity, especially for us entrepreneurs. Please be safe, and we'll see you next year.